Good evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Mesadine Bynum, and we're talking to you from the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio here in Washington, D.C. And, of course, this is tonight's show is going to be a continuation, part two of a series that's where a contribution to the ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad. So we're going to get started here with part two in just a few moments, giving our audience and our email listeners a chance to dial in or to come in on our email just to give you some information on how you can participate in tonight's program. You can either call in. That call-in number would be 657-383-1372. Again, the call-in number, 657-383-1372. Or if you wish to participate over the internet, you would blogtalkradio.com/NABASSC/URL. I will repeat, blogtalkradio.com/NABASSC/URL. And again, I am your host, and we're going to get started giving our listeners a few moments to call in. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be ready for tonight's show.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Aida Aliyah Rashid. I am the daughter of Nafisa Mustafa Rashid and Imam Enrique Rashid. I'm also the granddaughter of Melvin Jones Jr. and Lavinia Jones, who were a part of the Nation of Islam in San Francisco. And my great-grandmother, Bernice Jones, who was from Kansas City and moved to Detroit, Michigan, where she met my great-grandfather. And my great-grandmother left the Catholic Church and went into the Nation of Islam and also was a part of the community in San Francisco as well. I'm not going to talk much more about myself. Because I really want to begin. The self-accusing spirit, Nafs al-Lama, a voice of condemnation. In the decades after slavery, black people in America generally were consumed by deep self-hatred and lack of self-knowledge. As Iman Zaid and Dr. Hatton stated before, I would use the term psychological abuse as well. Black people were stereotyped as lazy, inhumane, and despised, which was reflected negatively in the way that they treated themselves, their family, and each other. What was in Mr. Muhammad's message that attracted and reformed thousands of disenfranchised black people, enabling them to become productive and responsible citizens? And is the message relevant today? The first panelist that will be coming up to speak and give an opening statement is Imam Abdul Karim Hassan. In 1956, Imam Abdul Karim Hassan and his mother and family, who were all a part of the Moorish Science Temple, heard the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad from Minister Malcolm X in Hartford, Connecticut, and soon after joined the Nation of Islam under the local minister, Thomas Jihad. Karim Hassan quickly rose up to the NOI ranks from private soldier and matriculated through the positions of lieutenant, captain, assistant minister, and then became minister of New Haven, Connecticut, mosque number, I'm sorry, I don't have the mosque number, 1959. Abdul Karim Hassan was sent to Los Angeles in 1971 by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as Minister of Temple No. 27 and West Coast Regional Representative, where he worked with Captain Edward, who's also named Ali Rashid. Under his administration in the early 1970s, he established a Your Supermarket bakery, a wholesale warehouse, 10,000 square feet, poultry, fish market, and restaurant. Altogether, his administration established 23 businesses and created employment for 400 community members. In 1975, he hosted the Afro-Asian Bazaar, attracting over 10,000 people, including Mayor Bradley, Muhammad Ali, George Foreman, and a host of other Hollywood stars. Today, Imam Karim Hassan is a member of the American Society of Muslims under the late Imam W.D. Muhammad and is currently the Imam of Masjid Bilal in Los Angeles and continues to work towards building an upstanding community, catering to the needs and betterment of humanity. I'm going to now introduce Imam Yahya Abdullah. Imam Yahya Abdullah, and by the way, I will say I was able to speak with Imam Yahya, and I know that there is a common perception that everyone who went into the Nation of Islam, became members of the Nation of Islam, were prostitutes and gangsters and pimps and whatnot. But Imam Yahya made it clear that his minister was a Harvard MBA graduate who embraced Islam or became a member of the Nation of Islam with some other constituents who were a part of the Harvard Business School at the time. And we might talk a little bit more about that today. Imam Yahya Abdullah is the Imam of Masjid Muhammad in Jacksonville, Florida, founded in 2016. He was the Imam of Islamic Association of DeSoto, Texas, founded in 2002. He was the Imam of the Dallas Masjid for 18 years and established a full-time Sister Claire Muhammad School in 1983. He performed Hajj to Mecca, Saudi Arabia in October 1981. Imam Abdullah attended the Arabic language program at the Saudi Academy in Washington, D.C. in 1987, where he was class Victorian, valedictorian. He was also a presenter at the 11th Annual Dawah Conference held in Cairo, Egypt, El Azhar, in 1988. In 1988, he co-produced a nationally aired documentary, The Hajj Pilgrimage, to Mecca. In that same year, he founded African American Men Against Narcotics, a group dedicated to drug prevention and rehabilitation, and was also featured in a nationally acclaimed documentary on PBS entitled War on Drugs. Imam Abdullah is the author of 4 books, Elements of Progress Leadership, Dynamics of African American Male Development, Manhood Training, Curriculum Outline, Religion is the Solution to the Crime Problem in America and Developing the Human Potential. Over the past 25 years, Imam Abdullah has participated in numerous interfaith dialogues with Christians, Muslims, Jews, and other faiths within Texas and across the United States and Bermuda. He's a student of Imam W.D. Muhammad and was his personal friend. He assisted Imam Muhammad with group volume by imports from China, group volume by successfully imported 2,000 high-quality men's business suits in May 2008. Group volume buy will also import women's clothing and accessories. He's presently continuing the business initiatives of Imam W.D. Muhammad. He has traveled around the world giving lectures extensively in Africa countries, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Zaire, and Egypt. He's currently the president of Commonwealth Partners, LLP, which is an online company dedicated to continuation and promotion of Imam Muhammad's China business initiative under the website www.cwp10.com. And lastly, I will introduce Sister Aisha K. Mustafa. Sister Aisha K. Mustafa has been the editor of the Muslim Journal Weekly newspaper since 1989. She's a graduate of Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, with a BA degree and double major in psychology and political science. She has a master's degree in journalism from Columbia College of Chicago. She is the third woman editor in nearly 40-year-old newspaper and is the longest tenured editor of 25 years. Hatayesha is a Muslim convert and comes from a Mississippi family of civil rights activists of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. era. She joined the community in affiliation with Imam W.D. Muhammad, the son of Elijah Muhammad and mentor to Malcolm X in the late 1974. Through the Atlanta, Georgia Muslim community since mid-1975, she worked throughout the Muslim community offices in Chicago, Illinois, prior to becoming editor of the Muslim Journal. Most significant among these years was her work with the prison dawah, or Islamic teachings, to the incarcerated populations, prison services being part of her concentration as an undergraduate. She worked in the administrative offices of Muhammad Mosque No. 2 and the Sister Claire Muhammad Schools and the Muslim Women's Development Class, and a brief period at the Muhammad Speaks plant on Federal Street. In 1978, she was named lead instructress of the Muslim sisters trained by Imam W.D. Muhammad teaching al-Islam. Her initial job in Chicago was a major transcriber of Imam Muhammad's lectures that were used to create the Imam's kits that trained former Nation of Islam ministers and captains on the role of being an Imam, a time which she calls her greatest learning experience. Aisha also has traveled as a part of delegations led by Imam W.D. Muhammad several times, going to Saudi Arabia, to Jerusalem, and the West Bank. Most notable during this trip was meeting between Imam Muhammad and President Yasser Arafat. She was a presenter at a three-day international media conference hosted by the Focolare Movement Net One Media Group held in Rome, Italy in 2004. She made Hajj to Mecca 1977 as a part of the first and the largest Muslim American led on Hajj by Imam W.D. Muhammad. And she's a mother, a grandmother, and an advocate for foster parenting. Each panelist will have, again, 10 minutes for their opening statement. So the first question we want to begin with is the question that's asked in the statement that was listed in the program about what was in Mr. Muhammad's message that attracted and reformed thousands of disenfranchised Black people, enabling them to become productive and responsible citizens, and is the message relevant today?
Starting with.
So, Imam Hassan, you will begin your 10-minute opening statement.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
With Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the world, the guardian evolver of this creation. And I witness that there is no God but Allah. And I witness that Muhammad is his messenger and last prophet. And when we say Muhammad, we're always referring to the one named Muhammad, to whom the Holy Quran was revealed. Allah refers to him as the Khatam al-Nabiyyin. The Khatam al-Nabiyyin. The seal of the prophet. The last of the prophets, the conclusion of the prophets. The Holy Quran describes him as such, the last of the prophets, the seal of the prophet that left us the book of Allah, which is our holy book, the Quran, and his sunnah, which translated in the original text of sunnah was his way, his tradition, the things that he said, the things that he did during his lifetime. And he said in that statement that he left those things, those two, that if we follow them, we will not go astray. We will not end up in the wrong direction. We would not end up in a difficult place. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to us that when Mr. David D. Farag came to America, he brought 104 books. The most important book of all of the 104 was the Holy Quran. And this is a book that he read often, and he read conscientiously, and he read seriously. And you can tell by that more in private than you can in public. Because in our public meeting, in our private meetings with him, in his home, over dinner, the same concept that was read in the Quran is the concept that he spoke of, which helped us to understand that we were on an evolutionary path toward universal Islam. So I feel it necessary to bring to your attention some of the clarifications that are necessary to understand what the speakers that are coming after me are going to say, and the references that they're going to use, and what it is being directed towards. So some people get a misunderstanding. I am responsible to Allah for what I say, what I know, and what I say. And you are responsible to Allah for likewise. When Mr. David D. Farag came to this country, there were already Muslims here. There were Yemenis here. There were Syrians here. There were people from other countries here. But they did not want to associate with us or deal with us. We never heard from them in our part of the city. We never even knew they were there. So there were no help to us at all. When Mr. David D. Farag came, he came by himself. This is why I referred to him as Mr. David D. Farag, though he had other names. I like Mr. David D. Farag and what it means. He came, and he came by himself with one intention: to help the downtrodden people in the ghettos of America. And he was here before the announced date of his appearance, which is July 4th, 1930. He was here before that, for he studied Marcus Garvey movement. He studied Noble Drew Ali, the Honorable Noble Drew Ali's movement. And he also studied the movement of Father Divine. He studied the people in these parts of the city until he devised a plan of how to bring Islam to them in a way that would be rudimentary, but in a way that will allow them to grow and develop and come into the light like a child coming into the world. For when he found us, as you well know, we had no respect. There was no love in the country for us except from each other. There were no help. We were drinkers and smokers and gamblers and robbers. We had a lot of problems when he came. We were eating pork, every part of the pig that you can, remember. And as my father said, when my mother introduced the religion of Islam to the family, and that we were no longer going to eat pork meat, my father couldn't go along with that. He never joined anything. My mother was a Marcus Garveyite. In fact, she marched in the parades of Philadelphia while carrying me as a baby. Then, moving to Connecticut, this was in Philadelphia. We lived in New Jersey, where I was born. But moving to Connecticut, Marcus Garvey movement was not in existence there, so she joined the Morris American movement in 1942 and enrolled me in the Morris American Sunday School program at 11 years old. So we came up through those, I would say, activist organizations. But my father never joined any of them. But he never denied my mother the right to join whatever she wanted to. And she brought that knowledge into the family, and she raised us on Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Noble Joe Ali, and his message, until one night in Hartford, Connecticut, the Morris American Sheikh invited a man from New York, a young man from New York, as a guest speaker. That young man turned out to be Minister Malcolm X. That was in 1955. In 1955, we did not attend the temple. Her family didn't. They were, my mother had talked so much and had said so much that we didn't know whether she was all there or whether she was going off. Because those things we had never heard before, not even in the Marcus Garvey movement. But she went to the Muslim convention. It wasn't called Muslim convention then. It was called Muslim convention. She went to the convention in Chicago in 1956, the Muslim convention. I have books that we used to sell with the Muslim temple, with the Muslim convention names on them. So what I'm saying is actual facts, clarification, not interpretations, but clarification. The community of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad at that time was not called the Nation of Islam. We did not join the Nation of Islam. We joined the temple. The Muhammad temple in wherever city we lived. When we wrote our letter for acceptance, it wasn't to the Nation of Islam, it was to the temple. We were known as the lost, found, members of the Nation of Islam. I hear some people today say, not here, but that the whole world of Muslim name were the Nation of Islam. That's true. But they did not say that in writing, in their newspapers, or in conversations, that they were the Nation of Islam. We didn't say it either. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we were taught that we were the lost found members of the Nation of Islam. As Mr. Devadi Farad said, that we came from a particular tribe in Africa, most of us, called the tribe of Shabazz. So we were the lost found members of the Nation of Islam from the tribe of Shabazz. That's our full title. That Nation of Islam usage is a misnomer. It is a change from the original. And people just simply say now, as a shortcut, the Nation of Islam. But what were we called and what were we told to do? We were told to go out into the cities, into the neighborhoods where we live, and bring who? Lost founds to the temple meeting. Lost founds. We were Muslims, yes, but we were lost. Lost here in the wilderness of North America. Lost here. When Mr. Farad left, he left the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in charge, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's mission was to build a community or a nation of these lost found members of the tribe of Shabazz, because he was leaving, and he left the building of it to him. So what we represent is the result of that construction, that building, that growth, that development. We represent that. And believe me, the representation by those members in the 50s was so strong and so sincere. From 10 temples, which was the number when I came into the community in 1956, 10 number temples was all we had. But by 1965, with the incursion of the young people from the 50s and the early 60s, the total numbers, registered numbers of the temple was 42. In 9 years, we went from 10 temples to 42 temples. Because those people that came in then had two things that was on their hearts and minds. First of all, faith. They believed in the faith that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was pointing us to, and that faith required action. What good is saying that I am of this faith if we are not actively working in that faith to allow that faith to be not only our faith, but the faith of our family and our extended family. He taught us to speak the language of the people, to dress like the people, to look like the people. He reminded us of something that was read one time. He said, if you went fishing, what would you take as a bait to catch a fish? Would you take strawberry shortcakes and put on your hook, or will you take what the fish like? Please go out there and speak the language of your people and bring your people to the temple. What was the temple? He explained what the temple was, and we have it there with us. So my 10 minutes is up. I see Sister Fisher on the move, and I love Sister Fisher, and I appreciate what she did to bring this all together. But given a history in 10 minutes is like trying to build a rocket to the moon in a day. It takes longer time. But the people that is coming after you, they will show beyond a shadow of a doubt that the main man in this growth and development was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Look, we hear Malcolm name mentioned first. I just say this and I'm gone. She said Malcolm name first. Malcolm is a product of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad first heard of him, he was in prison in Massachusetts. And the message got to him of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was trying to do when Malcolm came out of the prison. Before he came out of the prison, he was Malcolm Little. By the time he came out of the prison, he was Malcolm X. Who was giving out X's? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Isaiah Kareem, James Shabazz, Dr. Abdul Salam, all of these were flames of fire. And they took hold in the 50s and the 60s and increased the number of the membership of the community to 42 number temples. So we are proud of these men whose shoulders we stood on. And if we're going to equal or compete or add on or continue on in the spirit that they have, then we have to get out there with our faith and also with our action to prove that we have not disappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
We have not gone anywhere.
That's right.
We're still here. What caused us to be so successful? Newspaper. The Muhammad Speaks newspaper caused us to be successful. So we have that. And we're thankful to Allah for it. We're thankful to Allah for all these people. And I see you, ma'am, coming to get me, trying to pull me off of here.
We love you, brother.
But I'm coming. Allahu Akbar. Thank you very much.
We're going to bring you. We're going to bring you back and just hear from you.
Imam Yahya, I just wanted to make a quick statement before you begin. I just want to let everyone know that Allah is so merciful because we are actually ahead of schedule. Even though we do have a timekeeper and we do have a very we have a schedule that we're trying to stick to. But on my schedule it says 10:17 introduced Imam Yahya, and it is 10:15. We really do want to make sure that we get through this whole conference today. And Imam Abdul Karim Hassan, I just want to let you know Allah is on your side because you had the time that you needed to say what you said.
That's right.
And I'm in a position, a very uncomfortable position. I do not want to tell any elders or pioneers to stop talking. But I will do what I can gracefully, with dignity and honor, to respect my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. But I just want to make sure we just lay that foundation down. So Bismillah, Imam Yahya.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, with Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lah, wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. I bear witness that there is nothing worthy of worship except Allah alone, the one and only. And I bear witness that Muhammad, the prophet, is Allah's servant, messenger prophet to all of mankind. Greetings to all of you here. Thank you, Sister Fitra. Thank you, Imam Zaid Shaka, Imam Abu Abdul Qadir, and to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf and Imam Hatim, and the founders and organizers that worked hard, especially Fitra. And we are so pleased, our hosts. We thank you very much, Imam Zaid. A wonderful dinner last night, for hosting us and having us here at Zaytuna College. I think they deserve applause from us.
Now, I'm not Imam A.K. Hassan, so I'm not going to risk taking that time that he did. He deserved that. He could have had my 10 minutes. I will, because I was in the Nation of Islam, but I also caught the tail end. I saw my Muhammad Speaks, my Fish, and all that. I came in, heard the teachers in 1973 in Jacksonville, Florida. And as Sister Leah said, my minister was from Harvard, a master's degree in business from Harvard, Minister Michael Rashid. He's in Philadelphia now. And he shared something with me that I shared with Leah, is that there were a group, this is important for our history. In the early to mid-60s, there were about 7 to 10 of them who, as part of their thesis work and dissertation for their master's degree at Harvard Business School, had to do case studies. They were African Americans, 7 to 10 of them. This was my minister. And he shared with me, he said, the 7 or 10 of them who were at Harvard, this is a part of our history we don't know. And we say, and Imam A.K. Hassan is correct, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, social reformer, did bring that element of people from our community into our community. But what we don't know, we had Harvard MBAs, about 7 to 10 of them, that studied the economic program of the Nation of Islam and Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and they submitted it as a thesis and as part of their dissertation. And in discovering and researching the Nation of Islam and its do-for-self program, and as Imam A.K. Hassan said, it wasn't just philosophy. It was real. It was tangible. All right? And they were so fascinated when they did the research, they had no African-American group to look at to submit to Harvard for their business case studies. So they studied the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and they studied the Nation of Islam's economic program. And every one of those brothers, Minister Michael Rashid told me, his name is Mike Rashid, every one of them that was in that Harvard business class, all of them joined the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam after they did their business case studies on the Do For Self program. So I want to present what I have to say in answer to that question, what was in the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that attracted the black man and woman in America to his message. I want to present it from the Quran. Chapter 4, verse 75. And this describes, to me, in my humble opinion, the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, God forgive him his sins and grant him paradise, and his son, Imam W.D. Muhammad, but before them also Prophet Muhammad. The writers, they say, and we have one here today, Professor Zaid, and they write, and Imam Zaid Shaka mentioned, and others, and it's true, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a great, powerful social reformer. But do you know who was a social reformer before the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? Prophet Muhammad. Maulana Maududi, God rest his soul and grant him paradise, he said, Al-Islam, Islam is an ideology for the social reform of the entire world. Muhammad the Prophet was a world reformer. Al-Islam is the most powerful, potent, the Quran the most powerful, potent ideology, philosophy for the social reform of the entire world. So I'm going to read a verse from the social reformer that gave birth to all other social reformers after him, Allah's revelation from the Quran. Verse 75, from the chapter titled An-Nisa, the women, society. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. Wa malakum la tuqatiluna fi sabilillahi wal mustad'afina min ar-rijali وَالنِّسَاءِ وَالْوِلْدَانِ الَّذِينَ يَأْكُلُونَ رَبَّنَا أَخْرِجْنَا مِنْ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ الظَّالِمِ أَهْلُهَا وَاجْعَلْ لَنَا مِنْ لَدُنْكَ وَلِيًّا وَاجْعَلْ لَنَا مِنْ لَدُنْكَ نَصِيرًا
Sadaqallah al-Azim, Allah the Mighty spoke the truth. Translating now from Abdullah Yusuf Ali's translation, 2009, 11th edition. All that's important. And why should you not struggle and fight hard in the cause of Allah, God, and for those who are unestablished, mustadafina, weak, unestablished, and they are mistreated and oppressed, men, women, children, in America. I know the Quran doesn't say America. I'm making it relevant to America or anywhere else in the world. Men, women, and children whose cry is, Rabbana, our Lord, rescue us from this nation whose people are oppressors, and raise for us from thee one who will protect us, and raise for us from thee one who will help us. Can't you see the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in this? I do. Can't you see Ma'am W.D. Muhammad in this? Can't you see Frederick Douglass in this? Can't you see Marcus Garvey here?
Right.
Nova Drew Ali,
right.
Harriet Tubman,
yeah.
Sojourner Truth,
yeah.
All of them coming through scripture. Allah has been with us from the beginning. He's been with our ancestors, and he raised up these freedom fighters and liberators one after another.
Right.
And as Imam AK said, he said, Allah revealed to Muhammad the prophet, he's Khatam al-Nabiyyin. He's the seal of the prophet. But he mentioned something important. What we're reading here, the prophet God gave to Muhammad the prophet, we say he was a prophet. He's also given prophecy that there would come a time on this earth, and I'm making it relevant to us in our history, when people would be taken from the diaspora, as Imam Zayd said. They will be taken from their religion, as Imam Daniel Kareem said. And they will find themselves in oppressive environments and oppressive situations because of the result of the slave community that John Blassingame talks about. And we found ourselves, our ancestors found themselves in that situation, and they cried out this prayer. God had already gave the dua, the prayer, to Muhammad the prophet, for the people to make that prayer, and our ancestors prayed for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They just didn't know that's who they were asking for. That's all they
know. As-salamu alaykum. I don't know why y'all guys holding back. I guess it's because we are in awe. I came in right around the same time, and we knew we stepped into a house that was full of men
and women. Sister
Aisha,
I'm so sorry. I need to make a quick announcement that if you guys have any questions for our panelists, if you could raise your hand, we're going to take 6 questions from each side. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sister Aisha. Please.
It's okay. And I want to start also with giving the greetings. I was so shocked by Yaka's short breath this morning. As-salamu alaykum. And to Imam Shakir, Imam Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, and the Zaytuna family, I want to say thank you for having us here. We will forever have you in our prayers because we know it was not an easy task for you. And you are our brothers, you are our family, and we appreciate you. I wanted to say thank you to Sister Fitra. She is a woman of courage, and for her persistence and her determination to bring us together. It was not easy for her. And in this room are many, many of my big brothers and sisters that I'm still in awe with. They were at the door of the temples and the mosques when we arrived, and they had already put in full duty, and they were still standing strong, and they were still accepting of us to fall in the ranks and to be taught by them and to be groomed by them and to just feed off of their courage, because they were courageous men and women. Today I want to focus on grace and this concept of self-accusing spirit. And just understand where we as an African-American people came from. Maybe somebody forgot. We came out of 400 years of chattel slavery. We were the most abused and mistreated people on the face of the earth. Listed with property. A slave master would have his property listed, and he had his horses and his cows first, and then his slaves beneath them. I recently read a will from a slave master who owned the property that Tougaloo College is built upon now, and they still have that slave house standing as a reminder. But in his will, he willed $10 a year to his boy, Jonah and Clyde, and he willed $10 a year to his woman, Cece. Now, he had many slaves, but he picked these out, and so she was his woman. And then he said, and I asked that they be treated kindly. So this is a slave master that know he's about to pass. He's given them some recognition, but he didn't give them the recognition of freedom. He did not free them. He gave them $10 a year, but he did not set them free. Just the idea of the mentality of the people that we were under. You have to understand that. In order to understand where Elijah Muhammad came from and what his mission was. You know, the state of Georgia was colonized by prisoners who were let out of prison camps in Europe. There were people over slaves who shouldn't be over animals. And who came to us to restore us? Who railed against the slave trade? In that chattel slavery. I know some people, we bring up the question, they say, that wasn't me, I didn't do it, I didn't do that to y'all. My family didn't have anything to do with it. And then those who started talking about reparations, they said, yeah, but you're still benefiting. You still own the bank that your daddy owned, that your daddy owned, that your daddy owned. And you got a foot up because of the slave trade. We have universities, prestigious universities who have to take names off of buildings because they sold slaves to buy that property. So understand what this is all about. And so we even asked our Muslim brothers and sisters from across the water, what did you do? What did you say? Did you do anything? You know, some claim you participated in the trade. We know some Africans even participated in the trade. But where's the God-conscious man and woman, the one that's professing this piety? Did you sound the alarm? Did you protest? Did you speak out? Did you even feel bad about it? Did it move in your heart? God chose a path, just like he chose one for Saul coming out of his wickedness. And we come from a Christian background, so I've got a lot of Christianity kind of built in here. You know, Saul was on the path, and God touched him, and when he stopped quivering, he was no longer Saul, he was Paul. There are many slave traders who turned to repent. So the concept that we hate white people, we were so angry at white people that we were so wrong about that, you have to remember how we were being treated. For example, you drop a bomb on Iran today and you kill 500 people, what do y'all say? The great Satan dropped that bomb. The devil did that. Now, we're saying 400 years of bombs were dropped on us repeatedly. Our men were lynched. Our women were raped. Our children were cut down in their prime over and over and over again. And someone says, a white man is the devil, and y'all get upset. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was pointing to a known behavior. In a known condition, in a known misdeed that was done to a people. And no, we don't think that all white men are the devil. One, for example, just to show how people can repent There were many slave traders turned to repent, like the English poet and Anglican clergyman John Newton, who wrote the hymnal Amazing Grace in 1779. He was a naval captain who ran slave ships, transporting slaves across the transatlantic slave trade corridor. He was in a storm on the waters one day, and the storms shook him so bad that he thought he was going to die until he made a submission to God that he would change his ways. And he came from being a slave trader to one advocating abolition. And in that amazing grace, he wrote the song. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. But now I'm found. 'Twas blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear. In grace my fears alleviate. How precious did that grace appear. The hour I first believed, through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. 'Twas grace that brought us safe thus far, and grace will lead us home. It was God's grace through the Elijah Muhammad that led us to Islam. And what was Elijah Muhammad's state on his deathbed? We contend that Elijah Muhammad was a practicing Muslim because he would not have left the nation of Islam in the hands of his son if he had been anything else. There were many, many who never disputed him or went against his teachings, except one that stood out, and that was Wallace Muhammad. He always contended with his father. He always asked his father to think of the religion in a different way. And on his deathbed, Elijah Muhammad left the nation of Islam in the hands of the son that he knew would change everything. His words was, the next leader would change everything. You may not even recognize it. There's so much more to be said, so much more to acknowledge about the treatment of our people. I come out of Mississippi, and Natchez, Mississippi was once called a devil's bowl. We had a former slave there that was called Abdulrahim Ibrahimi, who was in his father's army in Africa, was in charge of 2,000 men at a time. He was a horticulturist. He knew Arabic, but he was enslaved in a place that eventually was known for the death of 20,000 freed Africans. They weren't in enslavement. They had been freed, but because they didn't have anywhere to go when they were told to leave the plantation, they migrated to one spot, but they were not fed, they were not cared for medically, and they died of disease, and they could not even get out. That's why they call it the bowl. They kept them captive. They wanted to go back to the plantation because they had nowhere to go. This is the place Abdulrahim Ibrahim was enslaved, and we say to him, Abdulrahim Ibrahim, we are back. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you so much for all of those incredible remarks. I want to begin with a couple of questions for Imam Abdul Karim Hassan, also known as A.K. Hassan. Imam Hassan, I'm going to ask you two questions. These are two questions from the audience members that are in attendance today. I'm going to read both questions, and then if you can answer them. I know it's hard to answer in a couple of minutes, but if you can do your best. But I
have acoustics in here, and I have a question, so I'll read it.
Okay. I will also give you the questions. I'm going to read them for the audience members to hear as well, and then I will give you the questions so that you can read them if you can't quite hear me properly. How did our Christian belief in God help us to accept Master Farad Muhammad? And describe the effort of the language of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on Black America, not just with Muslims, I believe, but the Black American community here.
May I see that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we have two questions here. One of them is how did our Christian belief in God help us to accept Master Farad Muhammad? Well, you know, I don't think I'm the right one to answer that question. Because I don't fit into that word "our." My mother was a nationalist. She was a Black nationalist before I was born. She was a Black nationalist when she was carrying me. So we never grew up with a picture of a white man on our wall that is called the Son of God. We never grew up that way. We never had one of those. When we left, when my mother, first, you know, mothers, this is part of the answer. Mothers, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to say that when he sent me to California in 1971, he said, go after the women. He said, well, if you clean the women up, the men will follow. So if you get one, you get the other. And then Malcolm used to say that when you convert a man, you convert an individual. But when you convert a woman, you convert a family. And that's true. The children are raised by the mother, and wherever the mother goes, the children go. Whatever the mother believes, the children believe, because the mother raises them up on that belief. So in our house, there was no belief in a Son of God. There was belief in God, yes, but not a Son of God. And there were no complexion used or ethnicity used for that purpose. However, the idea of acceptance of Master Farad Muhammad came straight out of Christianity for those who were Christians. Because here you have a Hollywood model posing for a picture. And that picture is called the Son of God, which means that if you're Black, yeah, and then your father must have been Black. And according to the Caucasians in America, if there's one drop of Black blood in you, that blood is so powerful, and you're white, that makes you Black. So here we have this idea of God. Master Farad Muhammad was presented as a God as God in person. That was God in the flesh. It was the same as the Christianity, Christ in the flesh. So the Muslim thinking, the early believers' thinking in that day was that that if there can be a Christian God that is in the flesh, and then there can also be a Muslim God that is in the flesh. That's one following the falsehood that is in another. When I first saw that picture, I couldn't look at it. This is the God's truth. Allah knows, when I saw that picture in 1956 in the old University of Islam building downstairs in the janitor's, on the janitor's desk, when I first saw that, I couldn't look at the picture. And that picture never entered my mind as I was working in the cause of Islam. I just pushed that to the side. I believed what I could understand, and I followed what I could understand, but I didn't throw the baby out with the wash. I kept what I could believe, and I worked on that. And the other things that I did not believe or could not understand, I didn't even deal with it. I only dealt with those things that I could deal with, and seeing a white God in any kind of nationality was just not something that touched my soul. I was in it for the militancy. That's what I was in it for. I was in it for the militancy. I was a militant. And I was a lieutenant. I was a squad leader first. I was a lieutenant, and I was a captain. So that all told me what everything that you need to know about me is right in there. And I moved from there right on into the other. And I took that after my mother. My father said he don't want no part of that. And he come out of the ones that was horribly treated in the South. So I hope you can understand that in the short period of time. But there's a longer version that perhaps in the near future we'll talk about that. This one?
Describe the effect of the language.
Oh, now the effect of listen. Now this is the other question. The effect of the language. You know, for the first time in the history of America, the name Allah was ringing out in the streets. For the first time in the history, and it was held out in the streets by ex-slaves that had been systematically robbed of their culture, of their language, of their religion, of their morality. They were systematically destroyed during that period of slavery. And when they started waking up and coming out of that triple darkness, they began to reach for any light that they could find. Was no light coming from the slave masters. All the light was coming from the black people, as mentioned by our brother Yahya Abdullah, Imam Yahya Abdullah. And we latch on to that until we could find more light. But when we got the language from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad first, we were told that we were Muslims.
Yes,
that we were told that we were Muslims. Not just Muslims, but righteous Muslims. And we were also told by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that if we did not clean up, we could not resettle in another Muslim country. Because if those Muslim countries are righteous people and we go among them with our stealing and our lying and our drinking and our smoking and our chicanery, that they will kill us. So he said, the first thing that I have to do is clean you up. And that's what the temple is for. The temple was a cleaning house. The temple was not a prayer house. It was a cleaning house. And we have the Abulajma, in the Abulajma's own word in this pamphlet that you will find in the back of what a temple is and what a mosque is, and you can read it for yourself. But for the first time in the history of America, Allah rung out in the streets of America. Muhammad rung out in the streets of America. Islam rang out in the streets of America. All Yusuf, Kareem, Abdullah, all of these names were ringing out in the streets of America. And let me tell you something else that took place. The visitors to America, the immigrants that came into America, who had a community of their own without any connection or relationship with the other part of the community, they saw all of this activity going on
with the branding of us as Muslims and Nation of Islam, they had to come out. They had to come out. We were saying something that they should have been saying. But our saying it caused them to come out and start saying it also. So we began to form some kind of a brotherhood because of the connection that we were making with them. And when that happened, the energy and the strength of the Muslim world got bigger and it got stronger. But the language was the key. We were learning, and we were learning it in language. We were saying it with English, with English tongues, but with Arabic meaning. And that was the first time that was happening. And people were saying it. They see us on the street. Assalamu alaikum, brother. They see us everywhere. Salam, brother. Those are Muslims. And nobody bothered us except the police. And they bothered us because we wouldn't let them come into our temple meetings. Well, it was freedom of assembly. That's one of the four freedoms of the Constitution, and we were exercising our one of them, freedom of assembly. We can let in who we want to, let out who we want. Well, I'll tell you nothing. We didn't let drunks in either. And women, we had dresses and skirts in the temples for them, because in those days it was the mini skirt. So we couldn't let them in with the mini skirt on. We did at first, but we were sitting them on the front row. And the ministers couldn't concentrate with them sitting on the front row. Thank you for the question.
On his age. So this next question is actually, the next question that I'm going to ask is actually about the women, and I'm going to direct this question towards Sister Aisha Mustafa, but also if anyone else would like to comment, please feel free to. So I did do some research for this panel. I read Message to the Black Man in America by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it's a very interesting read. But in there, I was struck by several things, and one of those was the mentioning of the women, and I will read a quote first. Until we learn to love and protect our women, we will never be a fit and recognized people on earth. You and I may go to Harvard, we may go to York of England, or to Al-Azhar in Cairo, and get degrees from these great seats of learning, but we will never be recognized until we recognize our women.
And that's stay tuned. That's Assalamu alaikum. Stay tuned for part two next Wednesday. Assalamu alaikum.